Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Got a lot going on. The weather's getting cooler. The holidays are coming up. It's a good time to be alive. I finally got to break out my flannel, so it feels like winter. We're going to talk about some winter fishing patterns this week. First up, we got Peter Jordan reporting in from the coast. Peter, how you doing?
Hey, Nick. How are you, buddy? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. What's going on in your world, man? I've been doing more duck hunting and deer hunting than I have fishing, so I'm kind of out of the loop down here, but I see boats running up and down the river every day. I know that the faithful are still at it.
That's right, man. I mean, for the most part, what we've really got now is we finally got into our first like cold push of the year. And so for down here in the deep south, these fish are in a transitioning period. They're kind of moving from where they've been all year, and they're starting to kind of move, you know, throughout the water system. But, you know, it's the coast. So, of course, we're also having, you know, today is 76 degrees. So it's ups and downs. It's going to fluctuate. I think mostly the water temps are in about, surface water temps here lately have been sitting around mid-50s into the 60s, like low, like 60 to the mid-50s, somewhere in that ballpark. If you go into the bay, you're in mid-60s. But for your freshwater situation, what we're seeing is we're seeing our fish kind of pull from the shallows, and they're going to start orienting on points. They're going to start reaching down, getting a little bit deeper down in the water column. Because let's say, you know, in the at night and early morning and whatnot, that surface water temperature is in the mid-50s, right? So 54, 53, 52, maybe down to 50 if you just had a really cold night. But once they drop down 6, 7, 8 feet, they're going to get in that more kind of comfortable area. And so if we're conventional fishing, we're going to find that still to be fairly easy to get into. We can use crankbaits, or we can use jigs, or we can use just slow-rolled spinnerbaits. But what I've noticed is, and if we're fly fishing, we're definitely going to be running sinking lines. And if you're still water fishing, I'm going to recommend a sink 3. Just because that kind of gets you down without having to worry about too much. We don't have a super strong current. If you're in a river that's moving a little bit quicker, you might want to move to a sink 6. And when I say sink 3 or sink 6, that's how many inches per second that your fly line is dropping in the water column, okay? So that lets you get down and have that suspending action with your fly. So you can still use like a weighted fly like a clouser, or you know, something's going to give you that jigging action. I kind of prefer to do something that's going to be more of a deceiver, a game changer, or something along those lines. It's going to give you that really nice side-to-side action. But whether we're fishing conventional or fly, what we're seeing as far as within our rivers, as far as our forage is, for bass fishing, is we're seeing a lot of those larger menhaden, those big apogee, those bigger shad. And we're also seeing some of the smaller little shad. So, like, let's say you're in the rivers like, you know, Fish River, Dog River, Fowl River, you know, Magnolia and all that. What we're seeing is towards the mouth of those rivers closer to the salt, we're seeing the really big bait fish. And when we move further into the river itself, like getting kind of a little bit more away from that tidal movement, where you're not seeing a drop in tide, but you are seeing a slowdown in current fluctuation, we're seeing the smaller little bait fish. So what you still want to, in my opinion right now, I'm having a lot more success on like a broader bait fish pattern than I would be in something that is going to be like smaller, more minnow-like. So like, let's backpedal. Let's say we looked at this, you know, 2-3 months ago. I'm going to be throwing something that looks a lot more like a shiner because that's what we had in the water system. But now these fish have pulled up. They're coming in, they're coming out of the salt, they're coming into our river system like they do every year, and we're going to have more of that shad sort of situation. So further you are towards the bay or the Gulf, whatever it might be, kind of a bigger bait fish pattern, and then coming on out. We still have, if you're in that brackish area, lots of crab in the water, lots of little shrimp that are kind of in those weeds, and then so your bass, and down, you know, we talked about the other day, let's say we're at the bottom of the Delta. Okay. You know, you're still having a pretty decent bass fishery. That's going to start to slow down because now that salt is starting to really creep into the Delta. And so what's happening is our bass fishing, you know, our bass can tolerate a good bit of salt down here, but they're going to start to kind of push back into the Delta a lot more. But that being said, these guys are still super happy. Let's say you're throwing soft plastics or whatever. They're going to be super happy to go for a shrimp imitation, or I really like this time of year to kind of go into slow rolling a chatterbait or slow rolling single spin spinner. And I tell you, if you're using the conventional tackle and you're down in the bottom, I don't know if anybody remembers it, but the old Snagless Sallies. I learned about this years ago when I worked at Academy in college. A bunch of the old timers would come in and they get the purple and black Snagless Sally or the solid white Snagless Sally with a single gold spinner. And they all had their own special concoction of what they thought was the best trailer for it. But what I think that is, that's really throwing a lot of vibration. They're slow rolling it on the bottom. And it's fairly weedless, so it lets you really throw up in the cover. So that's a really good thing to do right now. Slow roll it. You're going to get those bass. You're going to get those redfish. You're going to get those specks. Redfish sizes are coming up if you're in the bottom of the Delta. And once we go further up, let's say we go up into the rivers, we're going to start to see our largemouth bass size start to come up as well. So that's been a really good thing. But what kind of we had this kind of conversation, you want to get low, right? And you want to get slow. And so you want to drop that. You want to get down in the water column and you want to kind of slow down. Because what's happening is your bait fish that are up in the top of the water column, they get a little bit chilly. They start to slow down their metabolism, so they're not moving as fast. And so that's what these fish are seeing. So they're not striking it like that fast reaction bite. Okay? So that's been really, really good. So kind of keep that in mind. If you're up into the river system or you're up, you know, in a lake situation, I'm really looking at points. And just like always, I'm looking at places where I've got fresh water coming in, or creek mouth or whatever, and that's what I'm really looking at. I'm looking at those points. I'm looking at those fish setting up ambushes, and I'm really seeing them in that kind of 6 to 8 foot range right now is where I'm targeting most of my fish at. Now, getting in late afternoon, that sun started to warm up. I can go into, let's say, I'll give an example. Let's say I'm fishing the Delta, and I might slide over to Bay Minette Creek. And you've got some of those really nice weeds in those back areas, but that can be really, really good still. That can be really, really great because those vegetation patches are really holding on to a lot of bait still, and fish are still active in them. But I'm not really seeing any action out there until late in the afternoon when that water temp and the surface has had a chance to kind of warm up. So that's what I've been seeing. So if you're fishing down in the lower end of the Delta, you know, I'm still trying to emulate crabs and shrimp and whatnot. As I work my way further in, I'm doing a larger flat body bait fish imitation. And then as I work my way up into, let's say we went from further up Fish River or further up Dog River or whatever. And I'm going to do that smaller kind of a little menhaden little deal. So that if you're conventional fishing, like a mirror lure, great profile, great size, exactly what you want to be doing. If you're throwing a fly, you can do an EP minnow or something along those lines. It's going to let you kind of get down there. And I'm finding that they're really happy with that good side-to-side action. And that's been my experience lately. And I'm thinking, once we've had, you know, I would say probably about midway. Let's see, we're on the 10th right now. So probably after next week, I'm thinking these fish are going to kind of settle into that winter situation. And I think we're going to be in pretty good shape. If you're in our creeks and rivers, just be paying attention to your water temperature. We've got a lot of spring heads all, you know, peppered out through here. And once you see that water temperature kind of come up a little bit, that's a great time, great place to spend a lot more time in right now. Because those water temps are more stable, which puts those fish in a much more happy mood to continue eating. So, you know, everybody's got their little favorite little spots like that. But if you're not familiar with it, just pay attention to your water temps, and when you see it start to come up or kind of stabilize, that's what you want to kind of look for. And you can find plenty of these places in the Delta, find them in most every one of our coastal rivers, and just kind of be aware of it.
Yeah, I like what you mentioned Well, spring fed water is,
Mm-hmm.
it's always good in the summer, right? Because we think of it as being cool, but then in the winter, it can be warm. Like it's stable
Right.
temperatures year round. And then you mentioned too
Right.
that you were still having some luck in some of the shallow, weedy areas later in the afternoon once they'd had some sunlight. I know that's one of my favorite things to do is you catch, like today it's a little overcast, but the sun's starting to peek out a little bit. You have that warm spell. And for years, I hated that warm spell as a deer hunter because I just felt like I was getting cheated. But what I found out, man, is that them little ponds and neighborhood lakes, golf course, water hazards and stuff like that. Like you get in the winter and you get that warm 70-degree day and you come out there after lunch and man, you can get on some
There'll be a lot going on
action.
there.
It's
You
like the
can.
first day of spring. Yeah.
It is. You want to look for the north end of whatever body of water you're in. Look for the north end. Look for a shallow flat, like a longer shallow flat. And bonus points if you have a dark bottom, something's going to really warm up during the day. And you'll be shocked about how much, bait fish come in there. And then once bait fish come in, of course, it's like ringing the dinner bell, brings everybody else in. I do want to say too, if you are fishing our rivers, our fisheries department have been working super hard. Big shout out to Lee Grove and our friends at Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. One thing I do want to point out to you guys, if you're in our river systems and in our bay, you should start to see, we're going to start to see like reports of striped bass being caught. And what I do want to tell you guys is, yes, they are delicious. That is true. But we're working super hard to bring back this native species to our area. They're our native anadromous species. These fish used to spawn in the Coosa, Tallapoosa, and the Cahaba and come all the way down the Gulf. And so they kind of, what they'll do is during the cooler months, they go into the bay. They go into Weeks Bay. They're going to be at, you're going to see them at the mouth of Fowl River, Dog River, all that kind of stuff. If you could catch that fish, okay? Get a measurement on it and then give a holler to Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources down here, right? And say, hey, I caught this fish. If you can help it, please release it. Just because we are trying to recover that species. It's a species that we kind of that went the way of the buffalo after we dammed up Alabama's river systems because they couldn't get access to the headwaters they need to spawn. But they're an amazing game fish. They're a ton of fun. And if you catch them, please release them. But if you could do us a favor and take a length measurement and then hit a GPS pin on where you caught it at and then holler at our friends at the Alabama Department of Conservation and Natural Resources and say, hey, I'd like to report that I caught a striped bass, blah, 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 blah. Lee and the folks up there really appreciate it because we want to really kind of get a feel for once these fish come out of our rivers during the summer, where do they go from there? And then we think it's an amazing sport fish that we can all really enjoy. And the more information we know about what they're doing during the year, the better off we're going to be. So we need to know, length is going to tell us a lot about the age range of these fish. We've been, for about the past 9 years, we've been reintroducing Gulf strain striped bass to the Mobile Bay area, right? And currently they're being stocked in a ton of our rivers. I said recovering that native fish species. So they're a ton of fun. They fight like hell. And they hit flies and hit lures with just bad intentions. And they are rough, man. They are great. I love them. But just do me a favor. Let that puppy go. We're really trying to learn a lot about them. And we want to put that fish back in so the next guy gets a chance to enjoy it too. So that we build that population up. And then, yeah, we can go in and start enjoying taking a few home for table fare. But let's, if you catch them, let us know. Send that information in, and we can enjoy it. These fish should be definitely taking advantage of our bay. And in years past, back when Mobile Bay had those grass flats, then we would actually have been able to catch these fish on the flats like you would redfish. But we don't really see that as much because of the silting end of the bay and how much grass flats we've lost. Which, as a matter of fact, is a nice little segue. If you're interested, we Patrick Armisen, he just started a Facebook page that says "Stop Federal Mud Dumping in Mobile Bay," and this is something that ordinary folks like Patrick, like myself, and just a whole bunch of other wonderful people are doing. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to let folks know that this isn't a political issue. This is an us issue, that our Mobile Bay means a lot to us. It's a way of life. Like this time of year, we're getting ready for Christmas, and we eat seafood at our Christmas table, and I know a lot of folks down here do too. And, you know, we should be able to have that resource to enjoy to do that. But what's happening is the Corps of Engineers is dredging Mobile Bay, the shipping channel, which we don't have a problem with. Go for it. Bring more jobs in. We want that. But the only thing we're asking is, got to stop open disbursement. And what that means is, and you can see it when you go out there, unfortunately, what they're doing is they're taking that silt and they're pumping it out and they're just shooting it all in the bay. And this is a 20-year project, and it's gonna drop 90 million cubic meters of mud all across Mobile Bay. So if fishing, if picking up crab, and you know, throwing a cast in for shrimp and doing all that's important to you, and you know, go on there, go on that Facebook group, and let us know how much you support it. Send it to your friends, because ultimately, what it comes down to is you fight for what you love. And I'm a firm believer that it's the people that enjoy the resource that need to stand up and yell the loudest. So if y'all could jump on that, that'd be great too. So I guess please let my striped bass go. and let's stop dumping mud in Mobile Bay. I guess that's the end of that.
Yeah, no, I've been happy to see that little stop federal mud dumping. Now I've watched that group take off in the past week. It seems like it's doubled in numbers, so it's definitely it's getting some local public support. And yeah, it's I've had some talks with like Dottie Byron over at the Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and they've got a really awesome map online of subaquatic vegetation. And but it's kind of frustrating when you look at it and you see how little of it out there really is. And I've run into that myself as a duck hunter, and the little bit of inshore fishing that I've done, there's a lot of water.
Well, there's some really cool stuff that can be done with this dredging. I mean, there's some really great stuff. We could put current breaks out there. We could do all kinds of stuff. We could rebuild, like, we could use that sand to help rebuild Dolphin Island. So for folks that have, you know, homes out there, we need to kind of build them back up a little bit. We could put, you know, ship channels. So like when we're going to have these bigger freighters go through, we could put, ship breaks out there. So what happens if you drop all that dredge and you set it in basically a pile, and it protects those areas. And you can see a really great example of what we could be doing with it. So if you go to Deer Creek, which is right beside the Theodore Industrial Canal, they've put some of those out there recently over the past year. And man, you can go out there and you can take a look at it, and you get on the other side of those barriers they put out, and we're seeing vegetation come back because it's not getting a chance to get just washed over and silting in. We're seeing a ton of fish in there. Good little spot to go check out. You know, we're seeing there can be a lot of positive stuff done with this mud. I think we all agree we want folks in our lower area and in lower Alabama. We want us all to have the chance to have great jobs and good opportunities, but it doesn't need to come at the expense of our friends that rely on this every day, like Patrick and like Richard and like our friends that are shrimping every day. Like this year, there's not going to be a crop to come off of Cedar Point for oysters. And it's because we're not seeing the spat recruitment because of that silt that's washing down in there. You know what I mean? And it's not just going to affect Mobile Bay. It's going to affect the Mississippi Sound and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of positive stuff we could do with the dredge material. Like, we could actually turn this into a great situation. And so we're not asking the Corps of Engineers to stop the project at all. We're asking them, hey, man, let's do something positive with all this dredge material. Because now we can do something that we actually want to do with it, and we can make some good use of it so that everybody wins. And that's all we're asking.
Yeah, it's particularly to me what was frustrating as I learned more about that issue is when you look at how similar deepening and widening projects have been conducted in other bays and other states, and you look at the amount of beneficial use that the Corps has set aside for this project, how much of the sediment they want to use for beneficial use versus how much they're using in other areas. And
Yeah,
then you look at their
Florida Savannah
national
was a huge
target where
opportunity.
they're going for, I forget what the exact numbers are, but it's something like nationwide, they're aiming at 75% beneficial use. And then here they're doing a much lower number. And then in other projects, they're doing a higher number. And you kind of read between the lines where, our bay's getting the mud just because that's just kind of convenient.
It's the cheapest, most convenient thing. And I think they think they can take advantage of the people of Alabama. And I think that Alabama is filled with sportsmen and ladies that really care about our resources. And I think they're going to learn that when they start to mess with our fishing, I think they're going to realize that when they mess with our seafood, our fishing, and our friends and neighbors that depend on this resource, I think they're going to realize, oh God, they're serious. They're not just going to give up. And what's going to happen is, guys, we have to remember this isn't just a now project. This is a 20-year-long project. And so they're willing to kind of slowly wait it out to save that dollar, which I get it. Everybody wants to save a dollar, but what's the expense of the local economy as a whole? You know what I mean? So, like, if you own a boat, if you own a kayak, if you own a fishing rod, if you own a net, if you have any of that and you fish in this area, you have a stake in it and you need to have a say and you need to have your voice heard. So it's not just, it affects that. And like, let's say you are fortunate enough to have a beautiful house on Mobile Bay and a nice dock and the whole nine yards. And man, isn't it just wonderful when you can turn a light on out there and out come up and you can have the kids go out there and have fun. And that's what we want to protect. We want to have that ability where you can drop that crab trap down, where you can catch those speckled trout at night, and you can have those family moments. But we can't have that if we're not willing to protect the resource, because the fact of the matter is, if you take care of the water, the fish will take care of themselves, and we're not taking care of that water. And that's our problem. We're not taking care of the water like we should. And it's one of those things, if you love it, you protect it, and if you don't, you're gonna lose it.
Yeah, it definitely. I understand a lot of economic arguments, but I think at the end of the day, I've talked with just so many people that move down here to Alabama, whether it's the coast or whether they're up in Huntsville or whatever. Like, it's the water is always part of the equation to why you move, right? Like, if you relocated to Birmingham, obviously there's some financial opportunities there, but then you got the Cahaba River. If you move to Huntsville, again, economic opportunities, but people want to hang out on the Tennessee River, one of the most diverse freshwater riversheds in the world. And people that come down here, that's always at the top of their list, like, hey, why'd you move down here? How do you like it so far? What do you like about it? And people are like, man, I like being here on the bay, like.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%.
We're definitely glad to see with this issue. I've been really happy to see how the angling community has gotten involved, showed up at the town halls, created the Facebook group, showed up, spoke their mind, wrote to officials. So definitely appreciate you helping out with that, Peter. Appreciate you leading the charge here on the Eastern Shore. And always good to have you on the show. Always happy to get a report for you. And man, if I don't speak to you before then, I hope you and yours have a merry little Christmas. Y'all got some good plans coming.
Yeah, man, we're gonna have some friends and family over. We're gonna eat us a bunch of wonderful Gulf seafood. We're gonna let the kids enjoy Santa Claus and them just be kiddos. I know they're all excited to get out of school, and hopefully we're gonna be able to go out on Mobile Bay and we're gonna be able to get out there, catch some nice redfish, and go out and go enjoy hopefully dipping up some blue crab and boiling them up and just kind of taking advantage of the bounty that Mobile Bay has to offer. And just, I think we're going to all be really thankful for the natural resources we have down here that have been provided for us. And we just, now it's our turn to take care of it. And I think that's going to be something that our family just keeps in mind, is just how much we have to be thankful for, and how much we're willing to take care of it.
I like the sound of holiday dinner being some blackened redfish and some shrimp and grits and some stuffed crabs. That
It ain't bad, though.
hits a little. I
It
think
ain't
that hits a
bad.
little bit better than a smoked ham and a turkey. Like, I may have to
Man, we.
make that the new tradition here at the Williams household.
Man, I'll tell you, that was what we did as a little kid. So, mom, before we, my family moved out from my grandfather and his family, they actually originally were up in Mount Vernon. And then in the 50s, right from World War II, late 40s, early 50s. We're in that ballpark, I'm not sure. It'd be late 40s. My granddaddy, he moved to Selma and he purchased the farm that I grew up on at the time. And a lot of his family that still lived in Mount Vernon, they worked on the farm. They came down here, and a lot of our family that was in Mount Vernon ended up moving to the Mobile area and the whole nine yards. And we would have Christmas, or they would, this was for my time, they would have Christmas every year in Mobile. And they didn't eat turkey and ham and whatnot. They always ate seafood. They had gumbo. They had all that stuff, and that's what they kind of gathered around. And because it had been a prolific resource for them that they could take advantage of. And so that carried on to when I was a child. My grandmother, we would have Christmas Eve. That's what we did. We did Christmas Eve, like Christmas Day, and we would have gumbo that night. And that what that was it was remembering that we had only been one or two generations removed from Mobile Bay, from that area. I mean, I realize Mount Vernon's on up the Delta, but our family, that's where that family farm was, and it was, but that seafood tradition was a big part of our family. And then it's kind of funny that we ended up going from Central Alabama, which they went up there for the farming. We ended up coming as a family back down to the coast again, back down to where we'd been for generations. It's a funny little world, isn't it? But
It
that
is.
tradition of seafood for Christmas has always stayed in our family.
That sounds like it hits the spot. I might have to make a new tradition. I didn't know you had I know you were from Selma. I didn't know you had family in Mount Vernon. I was looking at the other day on social media since this is a fishing report and we give out fishing news. They look like they're getting close to being done with that new boat ramp that they're putting in there. They're getting a nice concrete slab. Like I saw them the other day settling that slab into position and
Yeah,
I had some
I don't
drone
know that we have
photography.
any. I don't know if we have any family left in Mount Vernon, honestly, anymore. I think everybody moved to Mobile or whatever. You have families, they move around. But yeah, I agree with you though. That's really exciting, and for a tiny little town like Mount Vernon, that's big news, man.
It is. It's
That's big news.
that's a conversation for another day, but like that's just something that I've noticed and had a few conversations about is like the Mobile side of the Mobile Tensaw Delta doesn't really have the same access. Like here going up 225, man, I mean, we're just peppered with boat ramps. Like every 2 or 3 miles, it seems like there's a boat ramp. And then you get over there off of 43 and just there's not that much access. And I've drove over there a few times and launched there, but it's a bit of a drive for me. And then the ramp was getting a little run down and rough and getting kind of washed away. And I'm looking at that new slab going in and I'm thinking, man, I have to go check that out. I haven't played over there on that northwest side of the Delta, but that may get me over there once they get that project done.
Well, holler at me. We'll go put the bay boat in. We'll go tootle around.
We'll have to
I
go
certainly
explore
don't
it.
mind.
I did get we launched out of there this summer. Jason Thornberry with the Nature Conservancy, he took me out there and showed me around that new 8,000 acres that they got, and it looked pretty fishy up in some of them sloughs we went up
Oh,
in.
well, hold
So
on
we.
now. I'm holding you to that invitation you sent me for that secret, top secretest spot.
Man,
I'm holding you to that
I
now.
you need to come because I was on it the other day, and you need to come before the rains muddy it all out and it floods because it was clear. Like you actually had 3 or 4 feet of visibility in that water. So you like to
Talking
fly
big game.
fish? Yeah. Hey man,
Been known to,
you
yeah.
know where
I've
I'm
been
at. It's
known to.
15 minutes for me. It's all you trying to get up there.
I know, right, buddy? I know. I'm the problem. I know it. I know I am. All right, brother.
Yes, sir.
Well, I appreciate you having me on today. I'm sorry you couldn't find a better guest. But it's always nice to be on and get to talk to nice folks like you. So, I hope you guys will take the time that are listening to just go enjoy some fishing right now. It's a great time of year. And if you catch one of our stripers, let it go, measure it in that spot where you caught it into our Department of Natural Resources, and then please consider joining our little group of folks that are concerned about our Mobile Bay. Stop that federal mud dumping, because it's up to us. It's up to anglers. It's up to people that love this resource. If
That's
we're not
it.
going to stand up for it, nobody will. Nobody
That's
will.
it. That's it. Too long didn't read is put the striper back, take the mud out.
That's it. That's it. Striper, yes. Mud, no.
There we go.
All
Cheers and good talking to you, man.
All right, buddy. Y'all have a good one.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by... Alrighty, guys, welcome back. Next up, coming in from up North Alabama, up off Tennessee system, we got Andy Witten. We've been doing some pregame warm-up talking about deer season, so we got that out of our system. Andy, what's the fishing look like up there for those that don't deer hunt?
So it's been really good here on the river, from what I can tell. Like I said, I must have been in the deer woods a lot, but we caught a little bit of rain the last couple of days, so my normal typical wading spots are blowed out. But I seen a smallmouth the other day off the river. It was 6.5 pounds.
That's a stud, man. We had a tournament down here last week, and they weighed in like an 8.5 pound largemouth, which down here is just unheard of. I mean, a 4 or 5 pound bass is a big bass. I think, I don't know if I've told you this before, my listeners have heard me say it, 15 pounds down here will consistently win your weekend tournaments. And I've seen them won with 12. So to catch an 8.5 pound bass, like that right there is a fish that I don't expect to see one that big on social media for a couple years.
Yep, that's how it goes, man. They come and go. It's like every few years you'll see one.
Yeah, that's 8, 8.5 down here's a hammer. 6.5 for a smallmouth is big. I don't know. I don't think me and you've talked since I did this. So I got a buddy up in on the outskirts of Nashville, and I went up with him a few weeks back to we got two daughters the same age. He's got one, I got one. We took them up there to have a play date, meet each other, and that give us time to, you know, drink a beer and hang out in his man cave, reloading some 5.56 ammo and just catching up. And but we got up that morning while the families were just kind of eating breakfast and slow rolling, and we went fishing, and I got my first smallmouth. He wasn't but about 6.5 inches. He wasn't no 6.5 pounds, but
I did see that actually. I seen that on your Facebook, I believe.
I did, man.
You said that, yeah.
Yeah, it tickled me. He fell for the old olive woolly bugger, man. Fell for the oldest trick in the book. Now I'm excited. I'm gonna be up there this weekend visiting some family up around Muscle Shoals. So it's good. Man, good to hear that they're still biting. Hopefully that water will come down a little bit here in the next couple of days before I get up there.
Yeah, it should. Like I said yesterday, I drove across one creek. I'll shoot you a message on it later, but I won't say it out loud. But it was kind of up in the upper north section, mm-hmm. but that lower section, like right here around me and all that, man, it looked beautiful. It's kind of up, kind of had that gray tint to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's money. When it hits that gray color for me, it's money.
I know down here we was talking with Peter Jordan, and I think the way that he put it was you got to get low and get slow.
Yep.
Up there, is that about the same thing, just kind of bumping along the bottom for them?
I'd bump. I'd crawl bump, or I'd do if I was going to throw bait fish streamers, I wouldn't do nothing crazy. I wouldn't stream it across there, you know, burning daylight. But I would, I'd throw some bigger streamers, something like some bigger craft fur minnows, or like maybe a sid or something, like, you know, along that lines. Or you ain't got to go as big as like a swinging D or nothing like that. Nothing crazy big, but I'd throw something 3 or 4 inches or bigger.
Yeah.
And I would just, you know, slow work it. I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't be burning it.
So something moving slow and a little bit bigger than, I guess, what the forage is up there right now. Just something that looks too good to pass up, huh?
True, yeah. That's what I would do. Something that's going to really catch your eye. And then, like I said, you ain't burning it. They ain't got to really work too hard for it. But I know a lot of guys on the river right now are catching them on, like, swim baits and stuff like that. So it's all big forage.
Yeah, that's something I need to get up there and do at some point. I know that fishery, that gets talked about a lot, the people going up there below the dam and like live bait, just freelining live bait for smallmouth bass up there below the tailwaters. And I want to try that a little bit, because I do some live bait fishing down here, and it's nice to hear people talk about bass and live bait in the same sentence. You know, a lot of times it seems like people, you know, there's a certain sense of people want to do it with artificials and stuff like that. But man, I've caught some hammers. All my biggest bass came off a live bait. And actually, I think my two biggest just came off a live night crawlers. So I got a book on my shelf that I think got written in the 80s called Lunkers Love Night Crawlers. And yeah, that's a good one. Them old fishing books, they didn't mess around back in the day.
No, they didn't. That's like my wife, she fishes with me, and she's a live bait type of person. And I'll have a fly rod in my hand, right? And she'll catch 10 to 1 of mine, but she catches all the big fish.
That's very true. So that's
All the
part
big
of
gray fish that I can't catch on a spinning rod or any kind of artificial. It's
yeah.
that big stone roller minnow comes down through there and he's kicking.
Oh
They
yeah.
can't resist it.
There's a so when I first started teaching my wife to fish, and I bought her, but you buy the bobbers and you buy the live bait, you hit the easy button, right? And I was too cool for school. I was gonna be like, I know you can throw that, and I'm gonna throw this spinner bait. And about 4 or 5 trips, I was like, I think next time out, I'm gonna rig 2 rods, throw live bait,
Oh
'cause
yeah. Oh
you
yeah.
get that right there, that gets old a little bit after you sitting there. 'Cause what I don't know about your wife, but mine has a habit of about her fourth or fifth fish, she'll be like, "Oh, so you ain't caught anything? Really? Man, I don't know. Like, hey, maybe try casting over there a little bit." And I'm like,
Show no mercy on you. Mine's the same way. Rough on us.
I know they're terrible, but oh no, that's good. That's encouraging that there's some fish up that way. I'm gonna be trying it a little bit if I can sneak away. We're gonna go try to knock another county or two off the list. And I was
Nice.
hoping to finish up this year, but man, there's a lot more counties in Alabama than you think there are. 67 don't seem like that much until about the fifth time you've made that trip up 65, you realize how big the state is. So,
I don't even like going near 65. I don't even like talking about it.
yeah, it's
You won't
I
be
know.
far from me though. I work in Muscle Shoals and I just live right here across the river from you or from where you'll be, but
Yeah, maybe we'll have to. I know it didn't work out last time. I had to cancel on you, but maybe we have to do a little meet and greet, and that'd be good. If you're not busy, what you should be busy doing is getting after them deer that you showed me on camera. That's I know for a fact that if I get up there by the time I'm 5 hours away from my hunting spot, that's when I'll see that, monster buck working scrapes. I got my cell cameras on, so that goes.
He's gonna scoop in there right by the time you get out of your car.
That's it, man. I think the worst I've seen this year was like as I was driving to a spot in the afternoon, I checked my cameras and he was there. Like,
Oof.
and it's just like, well, what are you gonna do? Probably not gonna be there by the time I get there. He'll probably be long gone. But
Yeah, be in another county.
I know if I'd have got rolling 30 minutes sooner, maybe.
I run a bunch of cell cams too, and I went door knocking, and I was after a really big deer that I got showed a picture of at work, and I ended up getting like 22 acres next door to it, and the deer got killed like a week later. But from what I heard, it went 193. It was crazy. It was a crazy big deer.
I got a good friend who hunts some of that stuff, that suburban stuff in Atlanta,
Yeah.
and he sent. We got a little group text. All the guys get together for hunting season and start the old group text back up. We don't talk that much in the summer, but there's me and a couple of friends, hardcore deer hunters scattered out across the country. And I mean, he was locked in on one, like you said, 180-inch deer, and he got hit. Somebody sent him pictures of it dead on the side of the road in Atlanta,
Ooh.
and he was, dude, legitimately upset. Like I talk a good game sometimes about, man, I'm just gonna sell all my stuff and quit and everything. But he sent the text, and we were ribbing him, and he's like, guys, I'm really not emotionally ready to handle this right now. Like, I'll
I
see you
love
in a couple of days. Like, I hate to be this way, he said, but that one hurts. He said, they don't hurt a lot. He said, that one was big enough to hurt.
one hurts, man. Like I said,
That's
I like my fishing and guiding and all that stuff, but as soon as October hits, man, I could care less about something in the water. I like my deer hunting, man.
I've mellowed a little bit over the years, but I kind of tend to run right there with you, especially once the rut starts going. Once you start seeing all that bark get knocked off all the trees in your spot, you start seeing them dirt patches big as a Chevy hood, and then it's kind of like, fishing will wait. Crappie spawn will be in February, and we'll get back at them.
Yep, that's how it is here, man. Like for me, I can drive an hour in every direction and hunt 5 different rut times. So to me, I'm a rut hunter. So I get to bounce around between, like Bankhead and then some places, Cherokee and here where I'm at. They're all different, but it constantly keeps me busy, man. I go from one to the other. I'm like a like a crackhead, honestly. I'm just jumping around everywhere.
I have said for years, ever since DCNR first, published that map based on phone conception times, I've said I was going to do that and just travel. And I could, like, I work remote. If I got a laptop and internet, I'm good to go. And I've sat there and said, man, I'm going to get me a little RV and just travel. And I'm going to do it when I retire. Like, I'm just going to rut hunt from November 22nd all the way till February 10th down here in Alabama. And
True,
it's
man.
going to be my retirement plan is a little 17-foot Airstream.
I got to thinking the other day. I thought, I got to work. Turn 30 this month, so I still got, 35 years of working. So I reckon there's enough time to build a big enough garage to put all these deer I'm going to kill when I retire. It's hard for a working man to consistently kill deer in Alabama.
Ain't that the truth? Are
I think it's
you?
the hardest state in the country to deer hunt, man, in all honesty.
Everybody says that, and I've got friends scattered everywhere. I mean, I got friends in Michigan, I got friends in New Jersey, Vermont, Florida. Florida's got it worse than we do by the
Yeah, I forget
numbers.
about Florida. Yeah, I will say
Oh,
Florida's.
yeah, I think most people at whitetail hunt forget about Florida. The solution from when I pulled back in the day, when I pulled like Pope and Young records and pulled Boone and Crockett records and pulled state records, and you just look at deer killed per capita and how many bucks have been killed above 120 inches and everything like that, it was like, oh, woof. That's I mean, it's like anywhere else in the country. Soon as you say that, I know we'll publish this, and people who are listening, somebody will send me pictures of 160-inch deer out of Florida. And
They
but I
will.
always just tell people, like, yeah, you can find one anywhere, but they find a lot more of them in Wisconsin every year.
Oh yeah. Yep. That's like me, man. Ohio is looking better every day.
I've driven through some of those areas, man. Like even you get up into Kentucky and stuff like that, and you're just driving down the road and you look out at the field and you're just like, gosh, that's a hammer. Like, and the locals are like, eh, whatever, he's 2.5-year-old deer.
Yeah, ain't nothing,
Okie
hundred
dokie.
146-inch 2-year-old.
Yeah, that's it. And it but no, we do have some hard hunting. What we got for us is a lenient season, and then, like you said, the multiple rut times, and then we do have some areas down in the Black Belt and Tennessee Valley. Like, we got some areas that hold some pretty big deer. And
We really do. We really do.
that's it. That's it. Well, man, it's always good talking to you.
You too, Nick.
Welcome to the club too. Welcome to your 30s, man. They're not as bad
Yeah,
as people
man.
make them out to be. People in their 20s, they act like 30s is big and bad. But man, 30s, I hope my 40s are better, but my 30s been a lot more fun than my 20s.
I'm liking it. That 25 on,
Yeah.
which I was wild. I was a wild child. Now I'm, settled into my roots, and life's getting good, So I turned 30 in 10 days,
That's
and
it,
it already
man. Well,
hurts. It already hurts, man, to get up and down. I don't know why. Somebody lied and said, "Oh, it happens when you turn 39. It's just 29 and a half. It hurts. It hurts, man."
it happened to me, like overnight. I turned 30, and which I had a kid, and that's the secret right there. Like, that's what really happened. But it seemed like I turned 30, and all of a sudden my bedtime went from, I don't know, 11 to 1 o'clock in the morning until my bedtime now is about 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock, yeah. I got that 8-month-old man, and he likes to go to sleep about 11:30. I
Man,
can't break him.
all I can tell you is there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Mine ain't quite two, but here you'll get them whipped eventually, and her little butt's in bed by about 7:30 every night, and it's
Ooh.
you're gonna feel like a new man
Yep.
after the first week of that, getting her down every night. And she gets down at about 7:30, wakes up at about 6, and it was almost like being high. I felt so
Yeah.
much better after two or
Yeah.
three nights of
What I'm waiting on.
that. There we go. Well, man, get you some rest. If I don't talk to you before then, happy birthday, and I always appreciate you on the show.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it, Nick.
Yes, sir. And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Buck's Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. This week we got reporting in from down here in the Mobile Tensaw Delta. We got our favorite water keeper. Don't tell the others, but he's my favorite. We got Will Strickland with Mobile Bay Keepers. William, what's you been up to?
Oh man, I've been inside too much. I need to be outside a little more, and I guess I've converted to be a fancy saltwater guy. That's the only time I've been catching any fish is down here in the bay. Make my granddaddy ashamed of me, but. Yeah, I caught my first big jack, and if you hadn't done it, that's a hell of a time. That's a mad fighting fish, and it was on some pretty light tackle too. So it took some finessing to get him in the boat.
I have not caught a jack crevalle in years, but we used to catch them. My dad, he was kind of, I guess, similar situation to you. He was from Central Alabama, grew up bass and crappie fishing, moved down here, worked better life for his family, all that, and. Got into the inshore and saltwater thing, and we would do it. And then I was exposed to it so much that to me it was cooler to go bass fishing because we went saltwater fishing every weekend, didn't go bass fishing all that much. So it's funny how that switches back and forth. But yeah, we've had Wayne Miller says that with it being so dry this year, we've been getting a bunch of jacks way far up river. I mean, I've heard of people catching them all the way up almost to 65. So.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing, and those guides, some of my buddies, they're interested in catching other fish because it takes a while to get them in the boat. But I've been seeing lots of pictures of clients north of the causeway catching jacks because that's a thrill, man. That's what people are paying for.
Yeah, that's it. It's a good fight. Well, I got a story that'll motivate you to go outside, and I got to bore everybody with it for a second. Even though this is a fishing show, everybody knows that we talk hunting from time to time. So I set a trail camera this morning on a spot out in the swamp where I've killed 5 bucks. I've killed 3 of them. It was pretty nice. There's 2 8s and a 7. So I'm running cell cameras for the first time this year, right? And I get there to this place, and I'm looking to see exactly where I want to put my camera. And I found 2 fresh scrapes. I mean, fresh scrapes, and it's early for there to be scrapes. So I was like, this is going to be good. Like thick cover, good travel corridor, trail intersection right there. It's real close to a good food source. And I was like, this is going to be money. So I got that camera up in the tree, and I'm positioning it, and I'm tweaking it and going down and triggering it to make sure I could catch movement at both scrapes. Right. And I won't know until tomorrow because I don't get pictures sent to me, but once every 24 hours. But as I'm standing there, waiting, like counting, 15 seconds for it'll take a picture again before I wave my hand. I'm just standing there, like street clothes, blaze orange hat on, and I hear something running through the swamp, and 2 does ran up to within 10 feet of me, not yards, feet, 10 feet, and stopped between me and the camera. So I don't know if it caught them, but I think I probably have a trail camera video of me just standing there in the woods like Snow White with deer around me, which is going to be my profile picture if I caught it.
I was going to say, man, that's the profile picture there. And I don't know when we'll release the podcast, but hopefully we'll get that video as well. Cause I imagine it spooks you a little bit too. Them stomping through there, getting that close. They have been coming for you.
Well, and it was weird because we're here in early season. It's not even gun season yet, and our rut's not really until tail end of January, February here on the coast. But for a second, like just my brain, I've seen so many times, like I'm standing there over hot scrapes, and then these 2 does come running looking over their shoulder, and I'm just like, man, I'm going to regret scouting instead of hunting today. Like he's going to be right on their tail. And then as I was thinking it, I'm like, that's stupid. There's not bucks chasing does November 14th in Alabama, but
The instincts took over then, huh?
It got me fired up. I did the other day. I went out and I shot a hog, and then I did a little fly fishing, a little place I've never been before. So I need to, I've joked for years with my buddies about trying to do the hat trick where you play a round of golf, like play 18 holes, shoot a critter, catch a fish, and then that's just it. Like, just go to bed early. Whatever time it is when you get done, just go to bed. You're done with that day.
I've done the latter too, but to play 18 holes of golf for me would take me about a day and a half. So you're a better man than I. I'll have to come up with another third option for my outdoors triathlon type of thing.
Well, what you do is you just go with somebody who plays and you just play off of their ball, you know, like
There
four
you
man, you
go.
just play best ball. And I'm lucky if my ball is usually not the best ball, but it's a good walk. So.
Yeah, nice to be outside. I plan on going tomorrow, so next time I come on, I'll have a report for you if we did any good. We're going in the upper delta, and I'm gonna
Nice.
bring the 5 weight along with me and
Ooh.
see if we can't do some good.
Nice. Yeah, I need to. I've been telling Peter Jordan we've been trying to make schedules work out. I got a place up here. I want to take him and I'm paddling him around and just see. He's better than me. Sometimes I like to take somebody who's better than me to an area that I think has potential, so then I can know. It's like, well, if he caught fish, maybe I can catch fish, and if he got skunked, just definitely there's no use me even trying.
Man, I love going with Peter, although there's times where I feel like one of my kids. He's basically fishing for me. Once he gets it on the line, he lets me reel it in. So yeah, he's good.
Hey, sometimes I've done it both ways. I've been that guy. I've been the Peter Jordan, and then I've been the Will Strickland. Usually I'm the guy who's being shown the ropes. Like there's a I think I remember me and you duck hunted last year, and you saw I didn't even raise the gun on them birds flying over the treetops. Didn't even try.
You're my guide.
Yeah, that's the excuse. Well, tell me, I could talk hunting and fishing all day, but what's going on in the baykeeper's world? What you got on your plate?
Yes, sir. Well, we've got, as always, we've got more issues than we can deal with. But the major stuff that folks may have seen in the news, I'll start first with the federal mud dumping. And I know there was a freshwater podcast, so I'll try to be brief. But folks come down here and fish, and I know y'all want to have beautiful beaches for your families to swim in and then maybe sneak away for a day and catch a redfish or something like that. Maybe a flounder. What's going on is the Army Corps of Engineers is deepening and widening our ship channel. And in doing so, they're increasing the amount of dredge material that they'll have to pull out of the channel to maintain it, keep it deep and wide. And over the next 20 years, they plan to dump about 90 million cubic yards of mud into Mobile Bay. We've been concerned about this practice, but the increase certainly is even more concerning. For some background, the practice was banned from 1986 until 2012. It was attempted to be brought back out of retirement a couple times during that time period, and local leaders killed it because they were concerned about what it would do to the bay. 2012, they got emergency permission to start it again because a storm's coming in, putting more dredge into your channel, and then that emergency has lasted until today. To be clear, it's cheaper to put it in the bay than to take it offshore or to do what's best with it, which is to rebuild marsh and do other beneficial use projects like rebuilding our shorelines, which are being eroded immensely by ship wake, and of course sea level rise is involved there as well. So we've been in this battle since this summer. There's not a whole lot of movement to report other than folks are getting restless and frustrated that they haven't seen the movement. So hopefully I'll come back on the podcast next time and give you a better update. But just to let the folks know, we have sent a notice of intent to sue on this issue. So if we can't get it accomplished through collaboration, which we've been attempting for years, we've got some more seat at the table now than we did, then we may end up seeing and letting the judge decide. But that's certainly not the wish. Those of you that want to protect Mobile Bay, you can go to savemobilebay.com and write your elected officials, as we think it will need some legislation once again to ban the practice. And that'll be your federal elected officials as well. So that's what's going on there.
You know, it's frustrating to me to hear that they did the right thing for 26 years, and then a short-term emergency change of plans turned into something more permanent, and then they decided to ramp it up. That's always frustrating. But I think you did a good recap, and just to kind of translate kind of what that means, why that matters to our fishermen who are
Oh,
listening
yeah.
in. That's you know, mud. I've heard it my whole life. It's a naturally muddy system, but it can get to be too much mud. Everybody knows the fishing usually gets rough the muddier it gets, and that's a lot of mud that they're talking about putting in there, choking out oysters, choking out the seagrass, which is already taken enough of a hit. I feel like I've watched the seagrass beds decline just in my lifetime, really, to be honest. So it's a sad situation. Don't bode well if you like to fish. You need them seagrass
Yeah,
beds.
it's a macro of really a pretty hard for us to comprehend the amount of mud that's being dumped in the bay. And when you if you're fishing these little streams and they build a neighborhood nearby, I know growing up the stream I played in, it changed, right? And it wasn't that it was all in the construction phase. It's the way the water flows now, and so that stream's eroded more and it's silted in more, and so those little crayfish don't live there. And so flounder, shrimp, all the they don't like being in that big muddy cloud, first of all, and then second of all, when they don't have any habitat for the children to grow up in that seagrass, oyster, things like that, then we see a decline in the fishery, and it's something that we're already seeing. And so it's a rare opportunity for the commercial fishermen and the recreational fishermen to join forces, and there'll be some opportunities for folks to get involved soon. So keep an eye out for that. Speaking of, you said 26 years. One of the things that's changed is during that time when it was banned, it was leaders in our community that stopped it. Folks like Baykeeper didn't have to get involved. And so that's emblematic, I think, of a culture shift that's happened. And so as we lead into the next issue, we're going to talk about coal ash, which is a statewide issue. Whether you know it or not, you likely have a coal ash pond somewhere in your neck of the woods, from up in the Tennessee Valley all the way down here to the coast. And Alabama is the only state in the Southeast that's not moving coal ash. Most states, Georgia in particular, you may know that Georgia Power, sister company to Alabama Power, is voluntarily moving most of their coal ash. And so Alabama is the only state that is not moving it. Now, we've got some good news this year. Hunters and fishermen and others that care made their voice heard, and the EPA did deny our state's ability to permit these ponds, as although the language in the permitting plans were good language, the actions were not showing they were implementing it correctly. And so the rules basically state that you can't leave coal ash sitting in groundwater. There's a few places where they've already closed it right there in place, basically made a landfill out of that toxic mess, and all the tests show that that it is still in the groundwater. Now, here in Plant Barry, which is up in the Delta, particularly precarious spot. If you've ever been in the Delta, good luck not getting wet. It is the water table. It doesn't have a high water table. The whole darn thing is a swamp. And their plans show that indeed that coal ash will be left into the groundwater. And what makes us unique here is that it takes one storm of the right size to see a disaster like we've seen in a few other places in the Southeast. Just in the last 20 years, there's been three major spills in the Southeast, the largest of which being in Kingston, Tennessee, where it was just a total disaster. And I mean, hundreds of people have gotten sick and died from exposure to this toxic mess. Not to mention the fish and wildlife that were destroyed. They're still finding arsenic in feathers of turkeys that were wild turkeys that are in that up there in that part of Tennessee. So that being said, there's some movement on that front. Baykeeper has been in litigation with the power company for the last few years on that issue, and we are in the appellate court right now. The power company did release a press release saying they were going to recycle the coal ash, which was great news, although not legally binding. And so we want something that's going to be able to be enforced, where they will be able to move all that ash. And then most recently, there was some news that they had settled with the EPA. So the EPA sent them notice that there was violation at Plant Barry, and had three different violations of their permit, or of the law, I should say. And they settled two of the three, which have to do with an emergency plan and improving the monitoring, which shows extraordinarily high limits or high violations of their groundwater monitoring. So lots of arsenic and other heavy metals in the groundwater, and they were fined several hundred thousand dollars. But the one that remains is the one that matters, which is what's going to happen to that coal ash. I will say on this note, the power company tried to tell everybody, hey, it's over and done, and we don't have to move it. The EPA said so, and the EPA, of course, had to issue their own press release saying that that's not right. We're still negotiating about the last bit. So I'm not sure what makes them think that we wouldn't figure that out. Maybe they think we're not very smart. But lastly, I'll circle it back to why it matters. If you like to fish, and we got lots of data, surveys that show that people in Alabama that like to fish, they like to eat their fish. I know I do. A lot of our state has fish that have shown higher levels of heavy metals and other toxics in them. We've talked about that again and again. And this coal ash is one of the worst examples of that, and that is getting in the groundwater, it gets in your river. And I know I don't want to eat any fish that have high levels of arsenic. Not that it's going to make me sick today, and maybe not tomorrow, but over time, you expose yourself to those toxics. That's how you end up with all kinds of terrible diseases, and cancer being the most common one. And on that note, I'll just say this. In the holidays, I do plan to spend some time up in Tuscaloosa. My in-laws live up on Lake Tuscaloosa, and there's a big drop-off there where, we got a buddy with the live cam to check it out, and there's crappie all down there. And my daughter, with her little pink fishing pole, caught her first crappie right there over Christmas a few years ago. We're going to be doing that again. But without going into detail, my family's been affected by cancer, and this year, I'm sad to say, we're not going to eat those fish. Now, I'm not telling you not to eat them if you're out there catching fish, but I want you to be aware of what you're putting in your body, and I'm making a different choice for my family. So we'll eat venison, and we'll eat some quail leftover from last year, and that kind of thing. And we'll probably eat some fish, but we're not going to eat them from right there off that pier, because I know the advisory says do not eat any largemouth bass. And crappie and bass have quite a similar diet, as you taught me, Nick. I didn't think they were as predatory, and you said, pretty predatory fish there. So I did a little research, and,
No.
wanting to protect my kids.
Yeah, it's that's something way outside of my ballpark, but I'll ask the question out loud to encourage more people to ask it. Maybe we can get an answer. But I see all here I've got the advisory map pulled up from Waterkeepers Alabama, and I think you mentioned last time we talked it was one of your icebreakers. That there was a do not eat any consumption advisory for all species on the Mobile River, right there outside of
That's
Point
right.
Barry. And you look, it's just peppered with advisories, do not eat bass. I mean, everything from, down south where you're up around, like Fish River and stuff like that, all the way up to where I'm at here in Stockton, just advisories on pretty much every major watershed. And, anybody who knows anything about fishing knows that bass like to eat shad and that crappie like to eat shad. Like crappies eat minnows. You can hammer crappie with a bucket full of minnows
Yeah.
or a jig that's made to look like a minnow. We've all heard Dip McMillan talk about his hair jigs that he ties, and he showed me pictures of them, and it's a little gray silver something about 2 inches long. And I've heard it explained that bass accumulate mercury because they eat lots of little fish and they bioaccumulate it. And it's like, well, I know crappie don't grow as big or as fast, but I also know that I've caught them that had little minnows and shad just coming out their throat when you pulled them up out the water. So, and I just don't see a lot of research on that, which is something that, like, taking into account some of the health issues my family has had. I've got a few family members have cancer, and you have a daughter, and that there's a genetic factor at play there, and I just don't want to add to that. So it's made me a lot more choosy about the fish that I eat when I see all this information that's out there about mercury, about PFAS, about all the different chemicals that are in the water, heavy metals, arsenic, stuff like that.
That's a good point to make, though, because as I said before, this isn't trying to say, hey, you can't, you shouldn't. We want you to have the information to make the choice, and that leads me to the next thing. If you can visit our website and see our fish consumption page, there's a few things to do there, but one of them is to write your elected official, and I will tell you what we should be asking for as a fishing community is not that they stop anybody from doing anything, at least not yet, but rather we want more data. There's studies that show in Tennessee and in South Carolina when they made fish consumption data more available and they improved the testing program that fishing licenses sales actually went up. It builds that confidence in you where you know what's going on. You know if you're in a catch and release zone. You know if you can catch you a few catfish on the bottom and take them home and eat them and be safe and that kind of thing. Because, you know, that's a part of our heritage. And of course, the next step is I don't know about you, but I know the law says it and I feel it. Those are my fish. They're all of ours. They don't belong to the power company or to anybody else that has a permit to put toxic chemicals in our waterways. And so, if you like eating catfish from a limb line, if you like, you know, eating a largemouth bass, which I do like to eat them, crappie, whatever it might be, first step is we got to figure out what's really going on, and we need to ask our elected officials to represent us and to put laws and funding into place where our state can do the same amount of testing and public awareness as other states. And then secondly, to say, hey, who's making it this way? And then try to change that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's something I would like to see, just as a baseline higher level of awareness, and more information to go off of. It's hard to make good decisions when you don't have the information, and then it's hard to make a good decision when you don't know that there's a decision to be made, you know. And I know there's a lot of
That's
guys out
exactly
there who
right.
don't know that they're making a decision. Just they don't know it's an issue. So I appreciate all the stuff that you and the other water keepers do here in the state, and I know y'all stay busy. I appreciate you staying busy on our behalf. Guys listening in, definitely check out the work that they're doing. If that's something you feel called to do, donate, volunteer some time, or just avail yourself of the resources that they have on their website. And William, hopefully here soon. It's hard to believe, but I'm starting to feel a nip in the air, at least in the morning. So
Yes,
hopefully we'll
sir.
be able to make something happen. Good luck this weekend. I hope to see some fish picks.
Yeah, next time I come on, I'll have you a little bit better freshwater fishing report, and maybe there'll be a duck or two mixed in there. Of course, I might be relying on you for that, so we'll get out there and see what we can do.
They've been thin, but I did see 7 or 8 this morning in a honey hole, which is better than the 2 or 3 I've been seeing. So I
Yeah.
think they may start trickling in. We may make something happen. So,
There you go.
yes, sir. Always a
Appreciate you
pleasure.
having me.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by. Would your insurance cover an air ambulance in a medical emergency? Fact is, insurance often doesn't cover the full cost of medical flights, leaving you and your loved ones at financial risk. But with an AirMed Care Network membership, you can focus on recovery, not on finances, should the unexpected happen. AirMed Care takes care of everything, with no costs for flights when flown by one of their providers. Membership covers your full household and starts at $99 a year. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list, and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. Also brought to you by Killer Dock combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also brought to you by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@secpond.com. Also brought to you by L&M Marine. L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380.